Hello, everyone out there in podcast world. Hope you're having a great day. You are listening to or watching live Service Business Mastery Podcast. I'm your host, Tersh Blissett. Today, I get an exciting episode. I say that a lot, but I really, Matt is a really cool guy. And I've known him for now for, I say, a couple years. It's probably been at least two years ago when we first met. Matt Coop with the New Flat Rate. And if you've never heard of New Flat Rate, it's a flat rate pricing, menu option pricing that kind of changed the industry several years ago. And I like the fact that talking to Matt or Rodney or Danielle, anybody with the team, and it's very obvious that it's not the quote unquote flat rate pricing that you're used to hearing or seeing. It's very much the menu option. And I've always loved the idea of almost the, I don't even know if this is what you, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Matt, but it's kind of like a, almost like a 100% closing rate type scenario, the way that it's expressed and worked out. And I like the way that there's so many options available that you really can serve the client better. But anyways, welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, thank you for having me, Tersh. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. So tell us a little bit about you, yourself, and the New Flat Rate.
All right. Well, definitely. Well, first of all, kicking off. So me personally, I am a personal and business development coach. I work with people one-on-one to help them resolve things in their life, and then I help them apply that in the business entrepreneurial type world. And I'm the head of training and implementation for the New Flat Rate. And the New Flat Rate, in short, is not what people think that it is. We are a process development company. And to what you said, we specifically focus on developing an easy-to-follow process for every facet of business, from the CSRs and dispatchers to the field staff to the salespeople, that do two things, Tersh. The processes that we design are designed to eliminate objections and lower sales resistance. Because over time, what we found is that if you can get those two things out of your conversation and out of the way between you and a customer, no matter what you're trying to talk about, what's left is a very candid conversation between two people with no walls. And ultimately, what's left is a customer that's ready to buy. Hmm. And so then you just need an easy way for them to buy. And like what you said, 100% closing rate is absolutely our focus, because the reason most people don't buy is because there was some sort of resistance that was still there. And so they just don't feel comfortable with it. Well, once we get rid of resistance, there's no reason for them not to. And so then one of our primary processes that we've built that the industry knows us for is our menu pricing system. And so our menu pricing system is an automated app-based system, but it's not, like you said, you know, it's not just a flat rate, here's the price. It automatically generates the options for the tech, so that the tech doesn't have to spend a bunch of time coming up with ideas of what to offer the customer. Mm-hmm. And then in short, all the options that it generates for the tech are designed to be within their pain or within their perspective of what they were hoping for today. And so nothing is a big red flag saying, why are you trying to sell me something? Right. So then yet again, it's very easy for them to just say, hey, let's go ahead and do that.
So I like the process where, it groups so many things together. I don't know the best way of saying this. You can explain this a lot better than I can, but how you kind of group things together so that, a lot of flat rate price books, it's like, okay, this is the price for your capacitor. This is the price for your, you know, contactor and other things like that. But you have the ability to, whenever we're replacing a condenser fan motor, we have the ability to also replace the contactor, replace the capacitor. So you don't really, almost don't necessarily, especially if they pick like your platinum option, where you don't necessarily have to go back to them and say, hey, you know, your capacitor is bad too. We just replaced your fan motor. Oh, by the way, now we have to replace your contactor type deal. Can you explain that a little bit?
Absolutely. And so the way the new flat rate works is in each area of concern. So like your example was like a condenser unit's not working when you get there, that you put in what the primary fault is. Like in this case, if a condenser motor is bad, and it pulls you to a pre-built menu of five options. Now, unlike, you know, like you said, the traditional flat rate, where those options would be like, here's your contactor, here's your capacitor, here's your motor, ours is built where they only have to select one of those, and it's pre-bundled with the things that facilitate and work the best to ultimately eliminate future failures. And so a good example would be like your top option is really designed to hit reset on that whole condenser's electrical system in the event that the customer wants to. And so the top option would automatically replace that motor, even replace the fan blade, set them up for a one-year return trip visit, give them a better warranty, and also get a new contactor, a capacitor, and even add a hard start kit many times. And then do a full electrical termination service and a clean and service on the unit all at the same time. And you know what? It's not for every customer. Mm-hmm. But we see that the majority of customers would rather not have to bring you back out for anything similar to this again. Mm-hmm. And so we see that when we just show them those options that are pre-done with no pressure,
right,
then they're able to say, you know what, Tersh, I would like to go ahead and just reset that back to good condition. I would like to get a couple of years out of it. Let's just go ahead and take care of all of it at once. But then they have the options all the way down to the bottom one, where as they move down, it just takes things out all the way down to the bottom one, which just swaps out that motor and that's it. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing is we see that with just a very basic, easy to follow, or we call it a simple to follow, because simple doesn't mean easy, Tersh, because you still have to do it.
Right.
But it is a very simple to follow process that we go through to show the customer that those options and design that any tech can do it. But when we just show them the options, we see that on average, at least 80% of consumers all across North America at this time, all across the US, all across Canada, 80% of consumers or more will choose an option higher than the bottom one. And they do it, Tersh, not because it's cheaper, because it's more money. You know, they don't do it because of price. They do it because of the risk and frustration.
Yeah.
You see, if you look back at even your life and you look at other things like a car, I always talk to technicians about cars because they don't always work on their own car, even though they can. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to a car, you know, you send it in to get worked on. Don't you just love it when they just do the minimum and then 2 weeks later you got to bring it back? I mean, does that just make you excited or what?
The most frustrating thing is whenever because I had this exact thing happen to my Ram and it was under warranty, and I took it to them and I was like, hey, you know, we're getting close to the end of the warranty. I want you to do a full tune-up. I'll pay for everything, you know, do the full tune-up on it. And then it got right outside the warranty, and even before it got out of warranty, I was like, I kind of smell the rear end fluid a little bit. Like every now and then I can just get a whiff of rear end fluid. And I take it back to them and they said, oh yeah, we saw that on the your tune-up, but we just assumed that you didn't want it fixed because it was a $450 part. And I was like, even if I had paid labor, the part was covered under warranty at that time. Now I have to pay for everything. Like, why wouldn't you have fixed it back then whenever I wanted it fixed? And now, you know, 2 or 3 months later, you're telling me, oh yeah, we noticed that before, but we just figured you didn't want to use it. And it's, I don't even know who said this, but I mean, you're saying no for the client. You can't say no for the client. You have to give them the options. And if you're only even with your program, without proper training, if you take your program and just say, you know, throw it out to anybody and say, okay, just give them, just fill out the paperwork, and you're used to the old way of doing the new flat rate, and you only give them a Band-Aid option, and then, like, especially, I mean, you can't complain about your ticket prices because you're only giving them one option. And even if they say no at that point, you haven't educated them and you've only given them the one option. So you're saying no for them in any other aspect.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned that because it's so easy if you just look at a different industry. Like for you and I, we look at the cars and can see it. But if you'll just look at a different industry where you would rely on another specialist, you can see how frustrating that would be if they just made those decisions for you. But that makes us dig into the psychology, Tersh, of why does a service technician do that in the first place? And we believe that it has to do not so much with them always trying to save money. It's got to do with the habit. And the habit is really the fact that these service techs, they drive a vehicle home every night, many of them, that's fully loaded, fully stocked. And then when they get home and there's a problem in their own house, what do they do? Well, they just do the Band-Aid a lot of times. In other words, they just walk over to the truck. It's no big deal. They grab the part they need. They smash it on. And then whatever wasn't working is working in 30 minutes or less. It's like, it's, you know, $5, 30 minutes, we're good to go. Yeah. And the thing is, if it breaks again in 2 weeks, they still have the truck and all the parts. Yeah. They just do it again.
Yeah.
Whereas they don't feel the frustration with the things they work on themselves that a general consumer would. The general consumer doesn't have the service truck. They don't have the skill set, more importantly. Yes, they have YouTube, but that's still 37 trips to Home Depot for them, right?
And so ordering parts off of Amazon, hoping they're the right parts.
Absolutely. But it's the fact that I don't think we're empathetic enough when it comes to our customers. I mean, I've been a service technician for a long time, and I'll be straight with you. There's nothing I can't fix. Mm-hmm. I might not be an expert at all of it, but I can research a little bit. My skill set lets me do that.
Yeah.
And so it's sometimes hard to be empathetic with their situation and understanding what they go through when they have a problem. So that's what the new flat rate does, is that the new flat rate automatically gives the options that the service technicians would have skipped.
Yeah.
And like you said, if all they do is show the customer the menu on the tablet, even if they don't go through the whole thing, but the customer sees those five options,
mm-hmm.
the customer could at least say, well, what about these up here?
Yeah.
And the funny thing is they would, you know, I don't know if you're aware or not, but when we started the new flat rate back in 2010, we didn't have any scripts to follow. We didn't have electronics then. It was just, we only had 38 menus. It was the most common heating and cooling repairs. I think we had 18. We had 18 cooling repairs and 18 heating repairs is what it was. And the thing is at that time, all we would do is if you bought the program back then, we would ship you a book and we would just say, hey, go in and show this to the customer and just tell them, hey, the top one, the top's the best, the bottom gets you by, what should we do? And that's really all you would say back then. And with that, the funny thing is the average customer still bought $200 more per stop than the companies were getting before.
Hmm.
And they, without even a presentation that was worth.
Right.
And it was just simply because of what you said, the technicians didn't have the ability, so to say. I mean, it could have, but the technicians weren't making the decision for them.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And by the way, Mike Aguilera says, good to see you, Matt.
Hey, good to see you, Mike. Thanks for chiming in.
It's really... not saying no is the biggest thing for me, like for the client, because I've been there and I've been the guy that's rushing through and saying, hey, look, this is what you need. Like, let's just get this thing done and not giving all the options. And then getting bit whenever you go back to them, you have to go back to them and say, oh, by the way, like changed out this motor, we changed out this module and we have more issues. We probably had a power surge of some sort because now I'm seeing that this control board is shorted and stuff like that. And we could have offered those options beforehand. And having that conversation, it really stinks because if you had the conversation and you offer all the options and they chose the Band-Aid option, if they chose the bottom option, the tier option, And then you went back to them later and said, look, we kind of need to bump this up, or we need to do something else here. Then they've at least seen all the options and they chose it, or they are aware of it. Like, we have to come back later. You have to come back in 2 weeks. You know, they are aware of what they were offered. But it's
no surprises.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of the biggest thing for me. But a lot of your training, I mean, I like the fact that it moves you away from selling a part, you know, it moves away from the commodity side of things, and you're offering a service. And we're Service Emperor. We value the service side of things, the value, and moving away from just being a parts changer is a huge thing for me. And I think that, that's one of the biggest things that you can take away from your program, I believe, in my opinion. I don't know how you feel about that, but
I do. And the thing is Tersh, no matter whether you use my program or don't, anybody online, whether they use the new flat rate or don't, you hit the nail on the head as far as it's just time to stop talking in commodities. And I'll give you a secret. And one thing that we train on very heavily is understanding what a commodity is. And it's really using the phrase, it's a specific phrase you'll use, and the phrase is, this is what you need, right? Because the moment you say, hey, Mr. Customer, I took a look at everything, and this is what you need. Now, the moment you say that, all of your skills, talents, and abilities that they wanted when you got there, because when you got there, you were the solution to their problem. They were excited. They're like, hey, thank you so much for coming. Yes, I just need you. They'll say, I need you to help me with this. But then you go take a look at something, and then you come back and you commoditize it by saying, all right, this is what you need, or this is what we need to do. And you put all of those skills, talents, and abilities into just a one line that says, this will solve your problem. And at that moment, you become optional to the customer, because if that is what they need and not Service Emperor, then they can get it anywhere. Right. Yes, they could get it from Amazon and YouTube and all that stuff, but I don't believe the majority of them want to. The thing is it's the fact that once we say this is what you need, then they could get it from any other skilled tradesperson. And so the automatic, when you generate a commodity, the automatic response from the customer, Tersh, has to be, well, how much is it? Mm-hmm. And so then when you tell them how much it is, if that does not mentally and financially make sense to what they just heard when you said, this is what you need, then they're going to go shopping.
Right.
And you were talking about that 100% closing rate. That's when the closing rate that's in the 60s and 70s and even 80% that the industry considers good, that's when those closing rates come into effect, is because we ultimately scare off the other 20% or more of the customers that lost the value that your team brings to the table.
So what should we do instead? I mean, how should we approach that scenario instead?
You know, that's a good question. So what we teach is we teach overcoming by commodities, and we use what's called verbal packaging. Okay. And verbal packaging, it has some negative connotations sometimes in the industry, that phrase, because if you haven't been through the training, it's easy to think that means that we're trying to hide something from the customer.
Right.
And that couldn't be further from the truth. What verbal packaging is it's simplifying communication by taking out the hangups, so to say. And so the way we use verbal packaging is we take the part names that you normally would use and we throw them out the window. We just stop communicating in part names. We still tell the customer what's going on and what's wrong. We just don't use part names. Now, if they ask, I'll tell them. But what we find is 95% of consumers really don't care what the part is. They called you for the service, like you said. They didn't call you for the part. Right. And so otherwise you'd just be a part supplier. And so in which case we'll go in and we follow some different things to come up with our verbal packaging. But we'll take like like that contactor, for example. A contactor ultimately is like a light switch. It simply distributes power. Mm-hmm. And so instead of calling it the part will refer to the system that it works in. Because you've been in HVAC for a long time, Tersh. And so if I ask you the question, you know, Tersh, if a contactor, you know, welds shut, and so that thing's running all the time, did it put any strain on the other electrical components in that system?
Yeah.
So why? Because it's connected to all of them. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the contactor where the failing was, that was just inside that one part, but it's actually part of a whole system. And so we refer to that system as a part of the voltage distribution system, or in other cases with some of the other parts, like electrical control systems and things like that. And so to answer your question of, well, how do we bring it up then if we're not going to create a commodity? We don't go to the customer and say, Mr. Customer, I took a look at everything and you need a voltage distribution system, because I'm still using a commodity. I just changed the part name at that time, which is dishonest.
Exactly.
Instead, we go to the customer and we say, hey, I'm a little concerned. I just want to let you know we took a look at everything outside there and we found a fault in. That's the trick is we found a fault in the voltage distribution system. We'll say, hey, but don't worry, we have some options. Would you like to go over them now? And the reason we say that is when we say we found a fault in a system, we see a fault is something within something bigger that requires who to solve it.
You or me as tech, yeah.
It requires you as a tech. And so you're still the solution to the problem. So instead of saying, hey, you know, Tersh, well, how much is it? They say, well, can you fix it? And we'll say, absolutely, I've got some options for you. Would you like to see them? And they'll say, yes.
Yeah, I like that. And then you just go through the menu options and you can explain it. And that goes back to, so that entire conversation and how you were saying, you know, the way that you present it to the client and taking the commodity out of it and being dishonest by changing the name. If you have ever seen a negative anything about anything that you offer, it's because somebody hasn't been trained properly. And
correct.
I think, and I believe wholeheartedly that if I've ever seen somebody say anything negative about any kind of menu pricing or anything, it's because they weren't trained properly. They were just like, it was thrown on them and they're just sent out there. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm not doing this right. People are giving me kickback. Well, you haven't been trained properly. So, you know,
A good friend of mine in the industry probably says it best. His name's Charlie Greer. Most everybody knows Charlie.
Yeah. Yep.
And I always heard Charlie say, he said, you could take a dishonest person and they're going to do the dishonest thing every single time, even if it's just a little bit harder.
Yep.
And so if you think about that, it's so true. And so we always say, hey, step number one, hire honest people. You know, I mean, just hire honest people. That's a choice. It's a personal choice to be that way. But then when we focus on that, then I have to realize, I say, wait a minute. All I can do, Tersh, is I can give you a tool and I can teach you how it was intended to be used.
Right.
And that's going to be based on my ethics. It's going to be based on the fact that, hey, I believe in honesty, integrity, and common sense and treating people the way you want them to treat you.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is that if somebody that is just out for personal selfish gain takes that tool, you can use a tool the wrong way. I mean, hell, just on the service side, just in the the world of tech skills, have you ever seen somebody use a tool the wrong way? Like maybe just taking a really nice like a Klein flathead screwdriver and beating the crap out of it with a hammer.
Turn into a chisel.
Yeah, they do. Right?
And look at the end of it and you're like, I know this is a flathead, but I can't see the marking on the end of it. I know what you've been doing with this.
That's right. And so the thing is it's the same thing. Right. And I'm with you with no matter what sales system, no matter what softwares you use, there's an intended way to use it. And then there's your way.
Yeah.
And the problem with your way is really just bugs me just for the fact that it's not a fair shake.
Right.
You know, if we don't at least try to follow something the way that it was intended to use, we don't know whether it was good or not.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and that's just an issue with everything that we do. And in business, I know what you're bringing to the table here with this conversations that you're putting out there to help people all the time. What you're bringing to the table is valuable, Tersh, but if they don't take it and run with it and implement it properly, it doesn't do anything for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So I spoke with one of your team members at, I believe it was the Mingledorf event last year, this past year. And correct me if I'm wrong. Are you integrating with CRMs or FSMs, or you're no longer integrating with CRMs, or how is that working? Because I know that there's certain CRMs that would only show three options. And so that kind of does away with your whole process. And so it makes it very difficult to do your process correctly. Are you still integrating with CRMs, or are you kind of doing it differently?
Great question. And for a little bit of clarity, in the world of programming and technology, is important for everybody to understand there's a difference between integrating and importing. Integrating means a seamless handshake. It requires what's called an API to make a seamless handshake with the software, which means my software has the ability to open up in theirs, or their software has the ability to open up in mine, which ultimately is an information pass-through. In the skilled trades industries that we deal with just today, heating, air, electric, plumbing, pest control, you know, chimney work, generators, there's a bunch of different ones. In those skilled trades, there's over 250 current active CRMs. Wow. and software programs.
I didn't realize
so
that.
there are. Now, a lot of them use the same type of technology and the same type of communication. Almost all of them, we have the ability to import. What that means is we can upload quick links that to where service technicians and sales professionals will present actually in our app, but then they'll have a 3 to 5-digit code that they just pass through to that software, and then it auto uploads all the stuff that the customer bought. So we can do that. It's just a little kind of a one step that they got to do. As far as seamless integration, we did complete our API last year. And so our API allows us to partner with CRMs. And so we're just beginning to start those partnerships for those seamless integrations. So right now we have two of them that are active that we can pass through like that and operating inside. And we're making more and more partnerships all the time. The big thing with us is we do try to stay out of a lot of the CRM world. My software will do some basic invoicing and stuff, but that's not the intent. That was just really to help people that haven't came off of paper yet. Mm-hmm. The big thing is I don't really want 250 competitors. I would rather play nice with all of them.
Yeah. Oh, I agree 100%. And the thing about it is like you said, if you're still on paper and you're getting hooked up with New Flat Rate, one of the first goals is going to be to get off of paper and get into the digital world for sure.
You know, it's funny because originally, Tersh, we were a printed price book. We were a printed price book. And then last year we were down to only 5% print. And then today we don't, we're not really supporting that anymore. It's pretty much 100%.
I was going to ask you that. Do you see anyone who has, uses your print and is more successful with print than versus digital? Like, obviously if that was the case, you would print more, you know, but I don't know if you had like the wild person out somewhere that really has success with handing that piece of paper, that menu, to someone.
You know, I do have some that are phenomenal with print, but honestly they would be phenomenal with anything. It's just their comfort zone. I have one guy that does like $8,000 a day in service, and he's pretty much a machine and still uses the printed book just because he's never adopted the iPad. He's like, nope, this has been working for me for, he's been with us for about 7 years now. And he's like, no, this is fine. I'll just keep it. And so, you know, it's not broke, don't fix it.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
But we're in a world where technology is evolving so much, And there's just so much technology to make your business so much more efficient. Mm-hmm. And more efficient and happier customers, you know, get rid of bad handwriting issues and all of that. I'm a service tech. I can't write very well either. Right. And so the thing is with all of that, the digital age has solved tons of problems. And so what we were running into in the print world is actually we didn't have the ability to expand our books anymore. Mm-hmm. We couldn't add more menus because they didn't fit. Gotcha. And I mean, before long, you would have a book that was like, you know, 10 inches thick or better. Mm-hmm. And so that was one reason why we started scaling that down. Gotcha. And moved onto the digital world is to be able to expand and be more diverse. In the beginning, you know, we did heating, air, electric, and plumbing. And so companies that were printed, they technically had 6 books they were carrying around in their trucks because they had the 3 trades, and then they had a technician handbook that deciphers everything for them and helps them understand the verbiage and stuff better. And so it was a stack that you had to have in your truck if you did all trades, that's for sure.
Now, are those the trades that you're doing still currently?
So currently we have heating and air conditioning service. We have heating and air conditioning equipment is a module. Then we have electrical module, which does have some generator work and things like that in it as well. We have plumbing, and then we have a couple of other ones that aren't active on our app yet. They're making some changes to do it, but we're fixing to be in the world of pest control. We're fixing to have a whole generator module, which will do a lot more servicing of it for companies that primarily do that. There's some companies that just work on generators. Mm-hmm. And then we're coming out with a new book that we just sent into beta now, which is actually in chimney work. But we're not just talking chimney liners, talking about people that actually build chimneys. And so when they tear a chimney off a house and rebuild them, or, you know, service them, repair them, waterproof them, and that kind of stuff. So we're doing chimney work as well. And we've got a water treatment module that's fixing to come out that takes, you know, right now we have about 13 menus for water treatment in our program. And so we'll take that to like 30 menus that specialize for the companies that actually go in and take water samples and then make recommendations according to what they find. So it'll be a specialty module for that. And then we're coming out with some remodel stuff a little bit for plumbers as well, to remodel bathrooms and things.
Nice. Yeah. It sounds like you just got all kinds of stuff going on there.
It's a lot. So we're expanding and growing, but we're an evolution-based company, Tersh, which means, you know, we pour back the majority of our revenue and our profits to expand the business and to touch all the different aspects. And so hopefully at one point we'll be in, you know, 15 to 17 trades at least.
Very cool. Very cool. So my last question for you is, I know that whenever we first met, this is probably 2017, maybe the beginning of 2017, I think was whenever I was there. There was a lot of focus on residential side of things. What would you say to someone who does, let's say, 50-50 residential and commercial service work? And so they want to, you know how it is with commercial work. Like you hope and pray that you're going to get on the roof and you're going to go through security and, you know, you're going to be on the roof within, you know, 15 or 20 minutes, but sometimes it's like half an hour, you know, an hour before you're actually on the roof. So how would you handle situations like that when you're not even presenting it to maybe the end buyer or decision maker there? Are you still able to use new flat rate?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. Does the new flat rate have restrictions? Yes, it does. So, but like in my service company, for example, which we sold out the end of 2012, my older brother still runs it today though. We were a lot of residential, but we did like commercial and industrial also. And we actually found that it was incredibly usable across all platforms. However, the restrictions, like in the HVAC world, would be things like equipment sizes. So like our price book comes set up and ready to go for pretty much 5 tons and down, 7.5 tons, most things, 10 tons, a lot of things. But once you get up into that, you know, that 15, 20, 100, 200 ton shit, yeah. Then all of a sudden there's just not the material in it.
Right.
And there's not any flat rate book that I've found that does that. And so, but what we teach, remember, is a process. The process works in all of them, you know, and so there's still menus in the book that if they're an industrial company, they could always copy those menus over and change the prices, and then it'll work for those jobs they're on. And we've done that a bunch and had lots of success. We're looking at some more customizations that'll be coming out in the future, not to overpromise there, but to will companies hopefully will be able to build kind of a whole section for just special stuff that they deal with to help with some of that as well. What we find, and we have some other processes that we don't always go through in our class that you went through, but we have some other processes to help in that market. We find that it's really just about clarity with those clients. And so, like, whether you're dealing with a property management company, we have a letter that we send them that just preps them to how we do business. And it gives them the ability to actually decide what level of service, whether they go from the Band-Aid to the Platinum, what level of service they want, even maybe before we go sometimes, they can set those parameters. And so we've had some of those commercial property management companies tell us, hey, just always do the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's pre-approved. We go, we do it. Who cares? It's money, right?
Yeah.
But then we've had other ones that say, hey, give us the bottom three options on every one and we'll pick in there. And then we've had other ones that say, give them all of them. Give us all of them. And so you just don't know unless you ask. But I do push really heavily for industrial and commercial to have an NTE. So just that not to exceed amount pre-authorization. And so if there's truly nobody on site or nobody to call for a service tech to get approval, then we pick the option that's below the NTE and we get them up and going.
Yeah.
And then on the invoice, when we fill out the invoice, we put in what we've done. And then on the bottom of it, we just put, we did run into some other concerns in this area. We have other options we would love to discuss with you. Please call us for more details.
Gotcha.
And when we do that, we get a fair amount of calls back and they move up.
Yeah.
And so we find that works well.
I really like the NTE. I mean, I think that you should really, even if someone says, just fix it, like, I think that's a conversation that you have to have all the time. I think it's going to cover, I believe truly, like anytime that, like sometimes my guys will say, well, they just said, fix it. Like I said, have you gotten, you know, cause you have to get your pre-authorization signature. And I'm like, have you gotten your first signature? And they're like, they said, just fix it. They didn't care how much it was. I was like, you know how many times that has come back to bite me and I've given away services because they come back and said, wow, that's like three times more expensive than what I expected it to be. Well, you said to just fix it. No, we're going to have an NTE or you're going to approve each one of these repairs.
You know, the number one relationship killer in the world, personal and business, is unrealistic expectation.
Yep.
And if you don't find out what the expectation is, or you don't help set the expectation, you're always going to be off. You know, I mean, the chance of hitting it is like, you know, shooting a bullet coming across with another one. I mean, it just doesn't happen. But now on that note, it reminded me, Tersh, I remember years ago, my father, Rodney, went out on an indoor air quality job. We used to specialize in diagnosing sick home syndrome when houses were actually killing people. And he was on a job where there was a kid that was severely ill. And so he went out and inspected this house, and he called the father, and he said, hey, I found what's going on and what's causing the problem. He's like, we can fix it. Do you have time to talk? And do you have time to come by and do it? And the father said just what you did. He said, just fix it. I don't care. And you know, any parent would,
right,
when it comes to their child being really, really sick. But my dad just pushed a little further. And I remember him saying, so should we stop at 5,000, 10,000, 15,000, 20, 25? And about right then, the customer's like, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
So the thing is, you know, it works out.
Yeah, it's crazy because, like, in your mind, even if you don't realize that, you subliminally have kind of an idea, like, I guess it's probably going to cost around this amount. And then if they come to you like half that price, you're like, hey, good. If they come to you three times as much, then you're like, okay, we need some explanation here. Like,
right,
let's have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But for you just to give an open checkbook to someone, that's not safe as a consumer either.
You know what? But even half the price isn't always a good thing, because sometimes then your question is, what aren't they going to do? And is it going to break again?
Good point. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Being the cheap guy isn't always a good thing. I mean, you know, as a business standpoint, I don't think it is. But, you know, even the perception of quality, it just doesn't typically run. I mean, people understand there's no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, hey, on the NTE note, though, just one you know, point for the listeners here.
Yeah.
Is one thing that always helped us with an NTE is we specifically requested one, and then we gave a price. And so we would do something on the phone like this. We would say, hey, Tersh, great. By the way, since you're not going to be there, since nobody's going to be home on the property, so we do this on residential, commercial, and industrial if no decision maker is going to be on site. We'd say, hey, by the way, Tersh, once we get to the job, because you're not going to be there, we do ask that you'll give us a not-to-exceed amount, just in case the technician can't get a hold of you for approval, so we don't have to leave and then come back, because that's just going to waste your money and cost you more. So can you just go ahead and give us a pre-authorization limit right now, just saying, hey, as long as it's under this, just go ahead and fix it, even if you can't get me on the phone. We'll still try to get you on the phone. And by the way, Tersh, I just want to let you know that most of our customers approve $500. Could you do that today? Yeah. And so we just tell them the $500. Like, if this is residential or something, if it was commercial, I'd ask for $2,000. But, you know, if it's residential, just say, hey, most of our customers approve up to $5,000. Is that okay? Or do you need less? And so then we always took it one step further if the customer was not going to be there. Now, remember, this is 2020. People are used to things changing. They are used to having to pay for things up front and stuff. It just happens all the time. And so we see very little pushback. When they say, yes, that's fine, then we just say, great. What type of credit card did you want to put on file so that we can go ahead and run that once we get to that, if we can't get a hold of you? And you might see, are you going to take your credit card up front? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I'm not even going to run it personally. I don't even run it before we go. But yeah. I'll be straight with you. I've called pest control services, and they've charged me the whole job before they show up.
Yeah.
You know, if you've never done that kind of stuff, they will. They'll say, well, for that kind of job, it's $250 for the start. So we need to go ahead and get that credit card and charge that before we come out.
Yeah.
And it's just different, but I didn't say no, I'm not going to pay it. And I just paid it and they showed up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Works now, out.
As you can tell, if you're listening or watching, you know, Matt has experience in tons of this, and he's between owning a business and helping others who have their business and the new flat rate, tons of experience. If somebody wants to connect with you and learn more about the new flat rate or about you in general, what's the best way for that to happen?
You know, I travel all the time, and they're more than welcome to give me a phone call, and I will do my best to call them back if I don't get that call. But otherwise, if they just shoot me an email, so if they just email me at just the word training at menupricing.com.
Training at menupricing.com.
Yep. And that's going to be answered by myself and my assistants.
Mm-hmm.
So there's three or four of us on that email. And so if you got a question, hey, just ask it. We're happy to help. And then somebody will get back to you if it's not me.
Yeah, those are the best ones, because then there's some checks and balances there and you kind of don't fall through the hole. And that's what happens with me. I'll I try to respond to every single one of them, but then I'll go through one at like 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll just be scrolling through emails and then like, oh, this one here slipped through the crack. I didn't even realize it's been a week ago or 2 weeks ago or something.
I know. And you'll get 150 emails in a day sometimes, and you're like, what in the world, you know?
Yeah, so absolutely.
Yeah, cool, but we're here to help.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I can attest to that. I've called Matt before and everybody on the team, I've spoken with them and they're nothing but a great resource. So I appreciate it. And Matt, thank you truly for everything that you've given to myself and the rest of the industry and everything.
Well, you're welcome, and thanks for having me today.
Yeah, absolutely. So if anybody has any questions, don't hesitate to reach out to me or to Matt or his team. Again, my email is tersh@serviceemperor.com. And thank you again for listening to or watching the Service Business Mastery podcast focused on service business owners, managers, and technicians who are considering becoming business owners themselves. I hope that we've answered some unasked questions that you may have had. But until we talk again next week, be safe and we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.